Brian had a dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey. This is your invitation to take part. This is the quest for 10,000. Hello and welcome once again to the quest for 10,000. I'm your host, Ben, and to my right is the man, the myth, sometimes the legend, Brian Ashley Stack. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing well. How are you, Ben?
Doing great. Thank you so much, everybody, for taking time again with us to download and listen and hopefully be amused by our musings on the latest movies Brian has seen on his quest for 10,000. As always, though, before we talk about some of the latest movies that Brian has seen, we're going to jump in into a question about Brian's quest to see 10,000 movies before he turns 40. And that question is, and it's one that's always on the forefront of my mind, Brian, 10,000 movies is a lot.
It's a lot.
How in the heck do you find time to watch those 10,000 movies?
Well, okay, for one, and I hope that none of my employer is necessarily listening. I doubt they are. But I have a portable DVD player that I take to work, and I keep it under my desk. And I have a Blu-ray set of headphones that I'm listening to while I work. Luckily, I work at a job where I can do that. So I watch two DVDs a day, typically, sometimes three. And then lately I have also been going to YouTube and watching like a couple of silent movies on YouTube at work while I'm there too.
So do you watch two movies at the same time?
Occasionally. it depends on what, on how invested I need to be to know if I don't or do not like this movie. I can say, okay, let me throw another one up here and see if it catches my fancy. Because sometimes, as far as my rankings go, some movies, I don't have to really, invest myself in the film to know it's either horrible. If it's horrible, I don't want to. If it's good, I don't want to invest myself. I want to just focus on that, and you can tell.
So this is the quest to watch 10,000 movies, not necessarily to absorb 10,000
movies. I'd say I absorb the vast majority. Now, there are times if I watch a film, particularly a foreign film, and I was distracted and didn't know what really happened, I will rewatch it because I don't feel like I gave it a fair.
Right.
I don't feel like I fairly understood or got what was being done, so I will say, hey, look, I couldn't tell you what just happened, so I need to rewatch that.
Okay.
That's not fair.
So maybe two to three movies a day. So that's during working hours. What about when you get home? Do you watch more movies then?
Do
you talk to your family? Do you say hi to your family?
Oh, yeah. I talk to them. What I will do is, when I'm doing household chores, I'll take my phone and have on Netflix or some other, streaming service and watch while I fold clothes or while I do dishes or things like that. So that I don't do it while I drive, thank God.
That's bad. We do not, in the quest for 10,000, endorse you watching movies.
I do not watch movies and drive.
Good.
Now, if we're on a long car ride or somewhere, I may sneak a movie in while we're driving somewhere. While Emily's driving, I may have a movie where you're kind of, what's going on? So I can watch a movie.
Right.
Occasionally.
And you mentioned in one of our last podcasts, you mentioned watching movies, obviously, with your family. So do you have a weekly or maybe monthly sort of movie night
that you'd like for it to be? Typically, there's a movie that I know I want to see, and it's a kid-friendly movie. I will, say, hey, why don't we watch this, and kind of coax Owen into making it a big deal for him. Because there are a lot of movies that I know, hey, this is a movie I want to see, and I know he would enjoy it, so I'm going to...
So, how many hours in a given day would you assume that you spend watching a movie? Or movies?
Good question. I don't know. It's a very good... Way too many. Way too many. Less than 24.
But that's good. That's, this is a quest.
I watch it once, so can I double up the time?
You could double up the time. 48 hours of movie watching is what might be possible. Now, you had mentioned earlier, too, that much to your wife's chagrin, She was in some ways the impetus for this quest.
Yeah.
For 10,000. Have you ever had to have a discussion, maybe with members of your family, saying, "No, I can't do that right now because I'm trying to watch a movie, and I'll do that later."
I don't know. I mean, I don't mind pausing and coming back. I mean, I think of movies as being the next evolution in line with the novel. And you wouldn't say, "I'm reading a novel. I mean, I can't do that." You'd stop and come back.
Well, of course not. It's 2015. You wouldn't say that about a novel.
Well, no, because you're not reading. But, so I will pause the movie and come back. You know, because most streaming services, most everything, you can pause and come right back to where you were left off. So
that's good. So it's good to know that this quest,
not consumed me.
It's not consumed you yet.
Not all of me.
Not all of you. There may be some dragons yet to be contested with.
At some point in the next year or two, there may be an intervention.
There could be. And maybe there'd be a documentary on that, and we could talk about that. Okay, well, that's an interesting insight into some of Brian's process of how he takes time on this quest. If you have any other questions about some of what Brian does in his movie watching, how he fits so many movies into his day, please do let us know. Send your own questions, comments to @10kmovies on Twitter or @10kmovies.com, Brian's blog, where he also posts reviews.
Probably where you found this.
Where he posts reviews of his movies. Moving on now, we talk about some of the recent movies Brian has watched. Brian, you mentioned also one of the great tools that helps you is iCheckMovies.com, which has so many different lists of movies.
Mm-hmm.
One list that you've been going over, you said, is a list of worst movies.
Oh, yeah.
And you have a couple maybe from that list to talk about this time.
Yeah, it's one of the lists I'm going through. And it's just, you know, the movies in contention for worst of all time. And it's not recent movies. Like, they're going back to some movies from the 60s and so on. And I'm working through those just so that I figure you can't know what smells good till you know what smells bad. So, you know, you got to have something to compare to. So I can say, well, it's better than that. So I know, I have a frame of reference. If all you did was watch the best films of all time, you wouldn't have that kind of, so that's part of the reason why I'm excited to do it. And sometimes I feel like some films are unfairly maligned. I'll start with one of those and work my way up to the ones that were properly slotted.
Fairly
maligned. I know that after The Village, M. Night Shyamalan was berated, and just his movies, you know, he was a one-trick pony, he had a twist ending, and that's it, and that's all he did, all he could rely
on. Wanted to be the new Hitchcock.
It was a little self-absorbed. I think people didn't like the length at which, it's one thing to have a cameo, but he made himself maybe too central a part.
And just a little too heavy-handed, would say.
Yeah, and Unbreakable, a little underrated, I think. Sixth Sense, properly rated, a classic.
I really like Signs, although
Signs is a decent movie. I think it may slot like slightly below those two. Maybe a little bit above Unbreakable, depending on your taste.
And an interesting movie that most people don't realize, his first movie, I think it's Wide Awake.
I haven't seen that.
Decent film.
But I think after The Village, people just turned on him, and it was just like whatever he did, they were going to hate before it was even came. And some of those with justification. The Happening is not a good movie. I mean, it's a horrible movie. His Avatar is not as bad as people said it, but it's still horrible. After Earth, horrible. But I'm saying I hate all these movies. But I think Lady in the Water was actually not as bad as it was made out to be, because I think it was just a victim of so much vitriol and hate towards him, people didn't give it a chance. Is it a great movie? No. Does it have flaws? Yes. Is he too involved in it? Yes. But I thought it was an interesting movie, and it did not do what he is accused of doing, which is just a the twist being the whole point of the movie. I thought it was actually halfway decent.
How much of that was Paul Giamatti, you felt like?
I love Paul Giamatti.
The film. I know you love Paul Giamatti, and one of the better actors who's probably starred.
Oh, yeah.
And
he did carry the film. I like Bob Balaban, who had a small role in the film. Other than that, though, the movie really didn't have a lot of named talent. Bryce Dallas Howard, who is, I mean, she's a B-level actress. You know, she's not, she may one day get there, but
she's not top of the list.
No. Rebel Alley is top of the list. but I thought it was an okay movie.
So you would give it like what out of 10?
Out of 10, I would say it was 6.
Which for M. Night Shyamalan movies, that's like a 12.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's better than, I think it may be a 5. I mean, it's right in that range of like just average. It's not going to stand out to me, and it may not be something that I seek out to watch again, but it's something that I didn't like regret watching. Which is not what I can say about White Chicks. So, I mean, maybe I just don't get it. Maybe there's a certain like type of humor that either I'm too old for or was never really going to gel with who I am. But I found it, you know, to be a comedy, I would think that you would want to do something funny. The premise is these two African-American FBI agents who were kind of bumbling to a certain degree. They are assigned to like babysit these two white girls who they think are going to be kidnapped, and they're going to babysit. And these white girls want to go to this ritzy weekend in the Hamptons. It's an important social affair, and they're kind of holding them up in a apartment in a place for a weekend, trying to just keep them from being kidnapped. Well, they come with this thunderstorm of an idea. We can catch the kidnappers if we just disguise ourselves as these two white women, and they'll never know the difference. And it's that may be the highlight of the movie is the creativity in the idea. But
now, Brian, I'm gonna stop you right there and say I would have watched 10,000 movies before watching movie based simply on the images, the promotional images of said movie. I remember when that was out in the theater, and I was like, "Who's gonna go watch this?"
I mean, I guess some people did. From what I can tell, because after I watch a movie, I typically will read some other reviews or read some summaries just to see if what my impression is totally online, or if I missed something, or just to kind of check myself and to see if I understood what I didn't get it, maybe I'll rewatch it and see if I was wrong. But apparently the Wayans are saying there is a demand for White Chicks too. I cannot believe it. But they would know.
There you go. Maybe not our cup of tea, like you said. So we went from unfairly maligned to properly maligned.
Unfairly praised.
Unfairly praised. So do we have one that maybe is a little properly maligned, slotted a little bit too?
The other bad movie that I've watched recently is the Kevin Costner movie, The Postman, which there was that after Dances with Wolves, he had that lull, you know, where Waterworld and then The Postman kind of almost put him out to pasture. You know, it's almost like he couldn't overcome the negativity of those two horrible, you know, thought of as being among the worst movies of all time. The Postman was an okay idea. It was creative. It was a little inventive. It had something to say. It was just too long.
Right.
If you'd shaved off about 40 minutes, maybe an hour, I think you would have had a very watchable, good movie. You and I were talking briefly before we went on the air about there's a cameo in the film that is one of the best cameos.
Top five of all time.
All of a sudden, for no reason at all, Tom Petty just comes walking in like an alternate reality, acknowledging that he's Tom Petty, but he's like,
not by name.
It's
amazing.
Bizarre and cool.
It's great.
And if the movie had been full of those type of moments, it would have been a really good movie. But instead, it just got to be a little bit too much Kevin Costner, like self-love.
Right, which is kind of code for it was too long.
Yeah, and he directed it. I mean, when you're directing, the problem is, too, he sort of directed Waterworld, but not really. He took over midway through. But he had won an Oscar for directing himself in Dances with Wolves. So I think that kind of emboldened him to say, hey, look, I'm pretty good at this.
Well, it's sort of his I'm Kiefer name.
And I think that's, directing yourself is very difficult. Not too many people can do it. And because you don't know when to tell yourself, hey, rein this in, you're not doing this or whatever.
Well, and I think you're right. It's an interesting premise, but it's also one that you pointed out is also a little bit ludicrous.
It's silly. It's silly. I mean, the idea is in a post-apocalyptic 2013 that the world is somehow brought back from the depths of despair by somebody pretending to be United States Postal Carrier.
Box office gold.
Newman!
Box office gold right there. I tell you, yeah, I don't see how that couldn't translate to something. This is actually, spoiler alert, I think the most bizarre part of the movie, which I agree is a little, I saw it in the theater. My brother, a huge Kevin Costner fan, wanted to see it. After Waterworld, I was like, are you sure? Because this is probably going to be bad. And he was like, no, I love Kevin Costner. Waterworld wasn't that bad. Come on, let's go see it. And he liked the film better than I did. Anyway, spoiler alert, the end of the film, the postman's daughter is talking about all the great
things he accomplished,
how it brought them back from the brink. And it seems it only took like another 20 years.
She's not 30. She's in her mid-30s, right?
Yes, it took another 20 years for the world to come back. Mm-hmm. For everybody to revert to fashion trends of 1998.
Yeah.
And to then have grass that was really, really green. Because there's no green grass
No green grass. Cars don't work. They all ride horses. Like, it's...
So, apparently...
Don't wash your clothes.
The key is, if things go to hell in a handbasket... I mean, we're already 2 years into this post-apocalyptic future. The key is going to be not email or technology, but someone who's able to lift back up the post
and provide hope.
Only the Postal Service can by not losing your packages and letters.
Wait a minute.
Hopefully, next episode, we will talk about some films that are maybe a little bit better. We'll just say that. They're just a little bit better. I appreciate you moving through those lists of worst movies. This is sort of maybe a guide also, listeners, for what not to do if you want to follow along in this sort of quest.
There are fans of bad movies. But there are only certain types of movies that you can, like, watch and enjoy, you know, because they're so bad. White Chicks is not one.
Duly noted. So now we move on to our last segment. We talked earlier about the time it takes to watch these films as Brian moves steadily closer to 10,000 movies in his lifetime before he turns 40. So we thought that our top five for this episode could be top five movies where time travel is a key element. So first, let me say this eliminates a couple of movies that Brian suggested when we first talked about this. Superman the Movie, starring Christopher Reeve. That movie does have time travel in it.
That is a key element, because that is how he saves the world.
It's a key plot point. I would not say it is the driving element and driving force in the movie. So that movie is eliminated. Also, because, and we'll have to do this for several top five lists, Brian's favorite movie would make the top of all of these lists if he could figure out a way to do it. So we also had to sort of make a caveat of Brian's favorite movie is also just not going to be included on this list. We're not going to reveal what that favorite movie is yet because I kind of want to build to that.
We will reveal it again and again and again and again.
Hint. So... This is already going to eliminate some movies that maybe you think of as time travel movies, but we tried to have a kind of internal criteria for ourselves for movies that featured time travel as a key element. So, Brian, what is your number five?
Okay, number five, a movie that is centrally about time travel, but when I think about it, it's ambiguous as to whether or not any time travel actually takes place. But it's a recent movie from a couple years ago called Safety Not Guaranteed. It's probably the best thing outside of Parks and Recreation that I've seen Aubrey Plaza do. It's got one of the Duplass brothers, Mark Duplass.
It's part of that mumblecore.
It is kind of mumblecore-ish. I don't know that it is, but it's sort of like that. And there's some other big name who I can't escape me right now who's in the movie. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was quirky. It was different. In essence, it's about a guy who places an ad in the newspaper that says he's looking for someone to travel through time with him. And at the end of his advertisement, he says, safety not guaranteed. And these journalists say, we got to find this guy and see how crazy he is and write a story about him. And I don't want to reveal anything else. We got Kristen Bell's in the movie, I think. But I don't want to reveal anything else because it's a fun movie. It's a sweet movie. It's in some ways a heartbreaking movie. But it's number five. Okay. Number four, I may be going out on a limb here, but Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Drop the mic. I prefer Bogus Journey to Excellent Adventure.
Now,
I think it's a meatier film. I think it feels heavier. It feels more substantial. And plus, Keanu and the other guy had grown as artists in that time.
Okay, two things really quick.
Alex Winter or something. I think it's Alex.
Two things really quick. One, that you called him the other guy. I just think that's wonderful. Two...
and to be honest, I'm not sure which one's Bill and which one's Ted.
I'm pretty shocked. I'm pretty shocked right now. I'm pretty sure that Keanu is Ted.
I don't remember. I think you're right.
The thing is I have heard from other people I respect that they really think, Bogus Journey is an amazing film.
It is.
It does a lot of unique, creative things. Again, unfairly maligned as a movie. Do they actually travel through time? I know they go...
In the first one, I know they do, but hold on.
And then they go to heaven. So that one is a bit unconventional. They travel through time and space.
Okay. It says here on the summary of the movie, Alex Winter is his name, so I didn't remember it. Chuck DeNomlos, who detests their society based on their music, steals one of the time-traveling phone booths with the aid of two robots fashioned after Bill and Ted. It's got to be about time travel.
So time travel. That's right. Okay. The villain... travels through time. There is that. Okay, I'll give that to you. If for no other reason, it still has the connection to the first one, which is obviously a time travel movie.
So it's number four.
I'm surprised. I don't know what else to say. Let's move on to number three.
Number three, Time Bandits.
That's one of those that I remember as a kid always being in the video store.
Yeah.
And being like, this looks interesting. And my mom kind of shaking her head like, we're not getting that.
Yeah, because she didn't want to spend the time. Well, it's Terry Gilliam. It's got Sean Connery, John Cleese, Shelley Duvall's in it, Ian Holm, who I think is fantastic. And it's just a fun movie about, just these characters that just travel through time. I think there are dwarves in the movie, or and it's just the pirates, and it's a fun movie.
So tell me, and I guess 10-year-old Ben, too, like what... They just travel through time? What else do they do?
I'm looking to see what all this I can tell you right here. They go to ancient Greece. They go to, they're trying to fight evil. It's about an 11-year-old boy who just sort of has a vivid imagination. He's fascinated by history, and he's obsessed with ancient Greece. He's kind of caught up in that. You know how we all go through that period where we've either just read or about to read Edith Hamilton's mythology and think, this is so important, before we realize nobody cares. But, you have that moment of, wow, mind-blown, eye-opening, and then you're like, blinders. and this boy's in that stage, and so, he wants to, he imagines that he goes back in time to ancient Greece and meets all this stuff. And it's Terry Gilliam films have a tendency to be very dense and very just out there, and they're usually based on some sort of literary trope or something. So it's good.
Okay, so that was number three. Number two
is a no-brainer. I think if I say time travel movie, it's going to be, if not at the top of your tongue or tip of your tongue, the next thing you're going to say is going to say Back to the Future. And it's a standard. I mean, it is in some ways a definitive time travel movie. It's just a wonderful film. And we're coming up on this October, being when Back to the Future 2 took place. And I'm super excited to meet Marty McFly him that the Cubs have not yet won the World Series.
I'm pretty excited to see
Jaws 47
the amazing technological advances we're going to have next.
Mr. Fusion is right around the corner.
A couple of months. Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
We don't need
roads.
I'd like
the jacket that like...
Oh, there's a whole thing. As far as the first movie goes, it's just, in a lot of ways, it feels like a very special episode of Quantum Leap. I mean, it has that kind of feel to it, although it predates Quantum Leap, but it feels like that kind of I'm going to go back in time and change the past for the better. But it's a very hopeful film, and it's a very sweet film, and it's just super imaginative and one of my favorites.
Yes, one of my favorite movies, too. I got to say, though, this is the second time that you have shocked me during this podcast, which is that's only number two. I definitely would have had that as number one, if for no other reason than Christopher Lloyd as Doc Brown. Your kids, Marty.
I love
We got to do something about your kids.
That is an example of a guy who's
just amazing.
A guy who fell into the perfect role. And in some ways, like, you know, Michael J. Fox.
Who doesn't love Michael J. Fox?
Well, I mean, that's also the perfect role. But it's just perfect casting. Biff is perfect. The guy who plays his dad, which is
ironic.
Crazy in real life, but he's perfect in this.
Ironic that Michael J. Fox was the perfect casting choice because, you know, Michael J. Fox is not the original
Eric
actor.
Eric Stoltz.
And that they filmed there's on the 30th or the 25th, the anniversary edition of the film that was released on DVD and Blu-ray. They have some of the scenes where Stoltz. Yeah. They'd already filmed it with Stoltz and those sorts of things.
And they have him in the jacket.
It's really interesting. You can also find some interviews with the actor who played Biff talking about Eric Stoltz. Eric Stoltz was this real intense kind of method actor. Yeah. And there were times where they were about to come to blows on set because...
Well, and I think
Michael J. Fox came in.
You can thank me later.
Save the film.
Aspiring filmmaker who hears this and goes off and makes this movie. But I think a perfect film to be made now that we are 30 years, because, you know, the movies went 30 years backwards, 30 years forward, 100 years backwards. But now that we are 30 years in the future, I think a perfect, like, semi-homage sequel would be a movie where someone goes back in time to 1985, and somehow does something that keeps Michael J. Fox from taking Eric Stoltz's place. So Back to the Future is released in this alternate future now with Eric Stoltz, and it doesn't do well. And you know how you have the photograph of the DVD cover, and Michael J. Fox is fading out of the cover. I think it would just be moving on to number one, because I know we're running out of time. It's a recent movie. You want to have any guess what it might be? It's a movie that came out last year, Interstellar. I think it's sweeping, it's epic, it was beautiful.
Interstellar, okay, I can get that. Very, very well reviewed when it came out. Matthew McConaughey.
He's on another planet right now.
If you think about it, there's no one better suited in some ways for like a time travel movie and all the eccentricity that happens in this type of film.
It feels like a semi-sequel to Contact. Have you seen Contact?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it has that kind of like, it's a science fiction film, but really it's about a relationship between a mother and father, and that's really what the movie's about, but time travel is just a way we can get to that.
Right, and it's kind of interesting, I think, because it's not, again, it time travel in some ways is a very subtle element of the film, from what I understand about it.
Yeah, it's not he's going back in time to do this, but there is elements of time travel.
It doesn't drive the plot, but again, it's a major element.
And the distinction between that and Back to the Future is not like a big chasm in between. You know, it's just a very small distinction.
It's just this close, this close. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, those are Brian's top five movies with time travel as a major element. So, listeners, tell us what yours are again. Tweet us. Visit 10kmovies.com. Let us know what you think. Join in on this conversation, on this journey that Brian is on. Thank you again so much for your time with this episode, and we hope that you will join us again very soon. Until then, though, hope that your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11. Have a good one.